Good Help, written by Nuraj Sikki, read by Opal Song. Fandom, Mo Dao Zu She. Rating, teen. Relationships, Meng Yao, Nia Meng Tue, Nia Meng Tue, Wen Rohan, Nia Hui Song, Wen Rohan, Jiang Cheng, Nia Hui Song, Jiang Cheng, Jiang Yan Li, Jin Zixuan. Also tagged for Alternate Universe Canon Divergence, Emperor Wen Rohan, Implied or Referenced Rape or Non-Con, Mistaken Identity, Misunderstandings, Plot, Role Reversal, and Bureaucracy. Chapter 1. Meng Yao had exactly one afternoon to enjoy having reached the pinnacle of power before he realized how much of a headache he was going to have before this was over, at which point he would likely swiftly lose his head. Wen Rohan did not accept failure. Meng Yao would successfully fulfill his orders or die. This was, however, not an especially new situation to Meng Yao, and so he set to work at once. It had been 5 years since Meng Yao had first entered the service of Wen Rohan, once a mere sect leader among five great clans, but now the self-dubbed emperor of the cultivation world, once his inexorable armies rolled across the land and conquered all in their wake, bringing the cultivation world entirely under his iron fist. Some of the other sects had raised some token resistance against his tyranny, but it was little more than talk in the end. After all, who was going to lead them? The last of the truly martial sects, the Nia, had been overtaken over a decade earlier. Its heirs disappeared into the nightless city without a trace, like a stone dropped into a deep pool. Of the remaining great sects, the Lons were too rule-abiding to produce a leader of the caliber needed to oppose the Wen sect. The Jin looked at the possibility of war and saw no profit. And the Jiang, well, best not to speak of the Jiang sect. Meng Yao himself was the bastard son of one of the former great sect leaders, Jin Guangshan. His mother, one of the many prostitutes that the man had frequented in his life. When he had first entered the cultivation world, he had foolishly presented himself at his father's home in Jinlin Tower, at Lanling City, and been humiliatingly thrown out. But that had not stopped his determination. He'd instead come to the Nightless City, where the Emperor did not care for the circumstances of a man's birth, mostly on account of considering everyone who did not share his own bloodline to be equally trash. And he'd taken the first job he could get, working his way up from there. And now? Now he had just been appointed the Emperor's viceroy, his right hand, capable of speaking with the authority of the Emperor in his absence. And he had just been informed that the Emperor was, in fact, going to be absent, leaving for several months on a journey to the far south in search of some cultivation relic. Meng Yao would be entrusted with the management of the Nightless City and the Wen sect's expansive domains, as well as all the sects that swore fealty to them. It was as close as anyone but Wen Rohan could get to being emperor themselves, the absolute zenith of the cultivation world. Jing Guangshan was undoubtedly kicking himself for his short-sightedness, assuming that he ever looked up from the breasts of his most recent whore long enough to notice where his bastard had ended up. Unfortunately, with great power came even greater stress. The Nightless City did not run itself. It barely even ran. Meng Yao tried, at first, to recruit help, seeking someone to be the able secretary he had been to Wen Rohan. But they were all either stupid, corrupt, and therefore stupid, or utterly useless in other ways. He grew more and more desperate to find some help as the days and that first awful week passed. Being Wen Rohan's right hand was not equivalent to being Wen Rohan himself, not with all of his rivals among Wen Rohan's other deputies competing with each other to see him fail. They tried to impede him in 100 little ways. They couldn't disobey him, not while he held authority, but they could be slow, be petty, be clumsy, be stupid. "Hold this," Meng Yao said to a passing guard, clearly on his way to his duty station, and shoved the extremely heavy box into the man's arms. The guard blinked down at him from his excessive height. The man was something of a giant, with a tall frame, strong back, narrow waist and broad shoulders, and handsome features to boot. Just Meng Yao's type. If Meng Yao were less stressed and busy, he might have ordered him to report to his bedchamber that evening to serve him. Another of the many perks of his position. As it was, he only had eyes for gathering up the mess of critical documents that had been accidentally knocked onto the floor. Again.
"You mean me?"
the guard asked, his deep voice bemused. And Meng Yao glared up at him. "Obviously," he snapped, and if his voice had a bit of a desperate whine to it, well, it'd been a long few days. "It's not that difficult. I only need your arms, not your brain, so just do it, whatever your name is." He turned back to collecting the documents, and when he next looked up, the guard was standing at ease, holding the box that had been tearing Meng Yao's muscles to pieces, as if it were as light as a feather. "You are with me today," Meng Yao instructed, and the guard nodded. "Follow." There were, he discovered, innumerable benefits to having a manservant the size of a small mountain by your side. Things could be easily retrieved from tall shelves. 3 times as many things as he could fit into his own arms were easily carted along. And even clearing a path, if necessary, was suddenly easy. Moreover, the guard he'd happened upon was quiet and quick to listen, or even anticipate, orders that Meng Yao was about to give. And in that respect, he was a head and shoulders above any other assistant Meng Yao had tried so far, both figuratively and literally. He'd already all but settled with himself what the guard's immediate future would be, by the time they made it to the armory. Meng Yao, having planned to organize the cleaning of the bloodied war weapons from the last border skirmish, while he considered what punishment would be appropriate for the squadron that had failed in their duty to win a glorious victory for Wen Rohan, no matter how implausible the request of them had been. But then the guard said,
"Why don't you assign half of them the punishment of supervising the other half while they clean half of the stuff? Then the other way around for the other half."
Meng Yao glanced at him, surprised.
"You could say that whichever side had fewer errors would escape further punishment," the guard continued. "That would encourage the cleaners to be thorough and the supervisors to be strict."
"That's brilliant," Meng Yao said, a little blankly. How long had it been since he'd heard a good idea that hadn't come from his own mouth? The guard glanced at him sidelong.
"Well," he said gruffly, "guess I'm not just a pair of arms after all."
At that point, his fate was sealed. Meng Yao also felt a brief spark of lust,
but restrained himself. He really, truly did not have time right now.
I suppose so, he said mildly, with his smile as calm as ever. When you finish today, tell your supervisor that you're being reassigned to work with me from now on.
The guard blinked, seemingly surprised. It seemed he had not thought his little bit of insolence all the way through, or perhaps failed to consider that Meng Yao might actually like it when someone showed initiative around him. He had a truly honest face, in Meng Yao's experienced judgment, one that reflected his thoughts in real time. Almost nothing at all like Meng Yao's own facile features that could be molded into whatever reaction seemed most appropriate. Honesty was a useful trait in an assistant. It meant you could see their inevitable treachery coming.
I'll need a note, the guard finally said, to explain my absence.
Meng Yao's smile widened, pleased that the man's brain apparently worked well enough to realize that the Emperor's viceroy could overrule any guard captain's arrangement, even for one of Wen Rohan's much-prized guards of the Inner Hall. So many others would, and had, started bleeding half-baked protests, trying to wiggle out of the work, less out of any revulsion for the job than for simple fear of new things. Meng Yao could use a man like this. And he would.
Very well, Meng Yao said. And who should I say is the subject of the order?
Ajue, the guard said. I mostly get called Ajue.
Ajue, Meng Yao thought to himself. That's a servant's name. Can you read? He asked.
Better than I write.
Ajue said with a shrug, and Meng Yao nodded. That was better than he'd feared, with so many servants these days being utter illiterates. At least this way he could use the man as something of a secretary. Making Ajue his secretary was, Meng Yao discovered, the smartest decision he'd ever made. Ajue wasn't much of a talker, a clear introvert who never learned to communicate with people, but there was no doubting that he had a brain behind all that muscle. He had understated his ability. He could read quickly and well, far better than Meng Yao had feared, and his skill at giving reports was positively superlative. He had an excellent way of breaking down a situation into its simplest components, laying them out clearly and efficiently using the fewest words necessary. And once that was done, it was easy for Meng Yao to figure out the right way of dealing with the issue. It was amazing how much Meng Yao could get done when he didn't have to review everything himself. That had been why his superiors had always valued him so highly. And now, at last, he could reap the benefits of someone else's competence for himself. Sadly, Ajue wasn't quite up to formulating responses on his own. At least at first. Far too soft-hearted in his suggested solutions, really. But then Meng Yao supposed that working as a guard didn't really give one much chance to engage in the sort of cutthroat politics that were so common in the Nightless City, since all the guards had to know how to do was fight and be willing to sacrifice their lives. But analyzing correspondence and coming up with solutions was something that could be taught. And Ajue was a quick learner, his speed increasing and his initial proposed responses growing more accurate each day. Soon enough, he would be able to lay out a problem, propose several solutions, recommend one, and execute it as soon as Meng Yao had blessed his decision. And the burden on Meng Yao would be all but gone. Best of all, Ajue had a vicious glare that worked wonders to cow many of Meng Yao's rivals, all of whom seemed to have assumed that the only reason Meng Yao would install a guard of the Inner Hall at his side at all times was because he was planning on having him available in the event of a quick order of execution. Ajue might balk at the notion of executing a traitor's entire family, or turn red at the notion of eavesdropping on some political subversive's pillow talk, but he was first rate at looming over people threateningly,
And it didn't take him very long to figure out Meng Yao's body language well enough to know when it was time to dramatically place a hand on the hilt of his saber, even though he never actually had to draw it. With Achue's assistance, things slowly started to fall into place. The army ran its drills every day without fail. The cultivators' reports from their night hunts fell within satisfactory range. The nightless city's populace was well-fed and well-entertained, and the city's food and money reserves were starting to build up. Even the emperor's harem was quiet, with his mysterious veiled empress, whose face had never been seen, having apparently decided to go into seclusion to rest. This was communicated in a short note, the calligraphy surpassingly aggressive and bold. But then again, Meng Yao supposed that anyone who could win and keep a place at Wen Rohan's side was worthy of such handwriting. "I hope she's not pregnant," he marked to Achue, who choked on his tea. "That's one of the main reasons women go into seclusion, isn't it?"
"Improvement of cultivation is the main reason anyone goes into seclusion," Achue pointed out. "Male or female, as long as they're cultivators."
"I would have assumed she'd be getting enough cultivation when the emperor was present," one of the serving maids said, winking boldly. She was an idiot and a gossip, but Meng Yao appreciated the information she often inadvertently brought him, and so never protested or dismissed her. "You know, when they're dual cultivating."
"Thank you. We understood the implication,"
Achue said sharply, and the serving girl flittered away at once. Like most of the girls in the palace, she both admired and feared Achue, speaking saucily about his muscles with her friends in the kitchens when he wasn't around, and quivering like a pudding whenever he actually looked at her. There was really no brain in that head of hers, Meng Yao reflected. She'd never once shivered when looking at him, and he was far more dangerous than Achue. "Achue," Meng Yao said, and Achue immediately looked a little contrite. Not afraid. He was never afraid of Meng Yao. But he was so sincere in his efforts to please him that it was very nearly the same pleasant feeling. Better, even. "Must you always be such a virgin?"
Achue flushed red. "I'm not a virgin."
"Are you sure?" Meng Yao asked, his ever-present smile turning a shade more toward genuine. "I'm not so sure. That prudish little blush on your cheeks suggests..."
"Oh, fuck off,"
Achue said, then belatedly added,
"Viceroy, sir."
Meng Yao cackled. "How are you even like this? Your guard hall must be the first one in existence that isn't full of sexual jokes every minute."
"What makes you think it isn't?"
Achue asked, crossing his arms in front of him.
"Maybe I'm just like this, despite doing all sorts of activities and hearing things that blister your ears off."
"Other people's, maybe," Meng Yao said, and felt the corners of his eyes crinkle in genuine mirth. That almost never happened. "Achue, you do know who I am, right? My background?"
Achue waved a hand dismissively. "A brothel deals with reality. A harem with lurid fantasy. I'm telling you, blisters."
Meng Yao sniggered, mentally noting that that meant that Achue's guard position must have been next to the harem, the poor man. It was refreshing to deal with someone as frank and straightforward as Achue, who neither flinched away from the mere mention of whores, nor disparaged him for having the blood of one, and who was one of the few people Meng Yao had met that did not need to be afraid of him in order to behave. A pleasant contrast to much of Meng Yao's life, even now. Power could only make people stop talking in front of you, it seemed. And there was no changing what they said behind one's back. Really, it was a shame that Meng Yao was so busy, and that Achue was as useful as he was. Meng Yao would truly like nothing better than to order Achue into his bed that very night, or even to get down on his knees this very instant. But that would likely spoil the excellent working relationship they'd developed. And good help was so very hard to find.
Besides, you're assuming that what I was offended by was the discussion of sex,
Achua was saying,
when in fact it was her complete misconception of what dual cultivation involves. It's hardly all grunting and thrusting. For dual cultivation to be truly effective, you need to focus and...
Please stop, Meng Yao said, shaking his head, ardor thoroughly cooled. That was undoubtedly Ajue's most annoying trait. He was a cultivation maniac. Even more sincere in his efforts than most. And, like most passionate devotees of a subject, he thought the rest of the world would be just as entranced by the small minutiae of it as he was. It wasn't that Meng Yao wasn't somewhat interested. He'd started cultivating very late, as these things went, at a time when most of his peers were already forming or had formed their golden cores, and he was at a permanent disadvantage as a result. But it wasn't exactly his top priority. He had a head to keep intact. Cultivation wasn't any use if he lost his life to an assassin or by failing to carry out his duties to Wen Rohan's satisfaction. Besides, people like Ajue, who Meng Yao was sure had a truly fearsome level of cultivation, when he wasn't suppressing it out of courtesy, might be impressive, might be strong, powerful, even terrifying, but in the end they all had to bow their heads to a nobody like him. What more could he want?